8:09 now, good morning. Joining me now in the studio with an open space update, Cheryl Fox with Summit Land Conservancy. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's find out where we are with Bonanza Flat. I know the auction closed for the folks at Leadership Park City, raising another $25,000-$30,000.
That's right. We're still, a little bit under $4 million, thanks to support from the Park City leadership. Also yesterday, we found out that Kuhl, the clothing manufacturer that's spelled K-U-H-L, is making a $25,000 donation through Save Our Canyons, which is one of the other coalition members. So, and we've had a lot of support since actually last Friday. So, we're about $100,000 in the last 3 or 4 days. So a lot of donations are still coming in, and we certainly do need them. I think, Kuhl would like people to realize that if they want to get involved, it's kind of now or never. So if people do want to make those contributions, wesaveland.org or savebonanzaflats.org or any of those, Save Our Canyons, any of the coalition are taking donations. And the leadership class, if anybody has been in Park City's leadership program, they actually have a challenge grant, and they are also taking contributions, and people are really coming out in support of that too. And that's at wesaveland.org.
Okay. So, if we're under $4 million, that's with a $70 million budget for Park City. That's pretty much an easy amount to come up with. So that means that city taxpayers will be paying more? Or is there somebody out there who's waiting in the wings to pick it all up?
We sure hope there's somebody out there waiting in the wings. I think it would be time to come out now and make that swan song. We are preparing to transfer the funds that we've collected to the city by the end of this week so that they have everything ready to go to close next Thursday. So it's kind of, it's now. So we hope that people will be inspired by Kuhl's gift or the leadership participation or, what's been so inspiring to me is how many organizations have come out of the, have come up and said, wow, we're not a conservation organization, but we really are in favor of this Bonanza Flats. Leadership is a case in point. All the airtime that KPCW has given to this cause certainly makes a difference. So, and of course the Park City Preschool and the kids at the Treasure Mountain High School Honor Society. So it has been a huge and inspiring effort, and really it's time now.
Okay. Let's see. You guys were out planting trees last weekend with...
That's right, with Park City, as part of Park City's net zero goal, they wanted to plant some trees because trees soak carbon out of our atmosphere. So we're doing it's a little bit of an experiment. Let's have these trees planted. Let's see how they grow. Let's find out if they will grow and not get eaten by the elk or something out there. But it was a great day. Over 40 people came out, and we planted over 100 trees. So, yeah, thank you to all those volunteers.
Okay. You've got something coming up, the Moonshine Adventure, this Saturday.
We have a lot of events coming up this weekend. It's, summertime is here. It's time to get outside and enjoy the open space that we work so hard to save. So we have the Moonshine Adventure, and that's a... we say, go out and look at the open space in a different light or no light. Actually, it's a full moon adventure, so it's at 8:30 p.m., and people meet at the Quinns Junction Trailhead, and there's a hike, bike, or walk, and so please do make sure you bring good, strong lights.
Okay, free?
It's free.
Anyone who
yep,
wants to
that's
show
something.
Up?
We do that in conjunction with Mountain Trails Foundation. On Sunday, we start the Hops Hunters Hiking program that we've been running for the last several years, and that happens every other Sunday starting this Sunday, which is June 11th. That one will meet at the top of Daly Canyon, right where the pavement ends, all the way up Main Street, turns into Daly Avenue. That will take about 2 hours. That meets at 9:30 in the morning on Sunday morning, so people can go up, have a hike, come back down, enjoy the Silly Market, and we'll start looking for those hops, which are starting to grow. And then we have a new program that's also starting on the 11th, this Sunday, and it's sort of a parents and kids citizen science opportunity. And we thought we would have run these once a month and come out, bring your kids, and we're going to do some different things. We're going to see, what's the quality of the water in the creek, or how much moisture is in the soil, or what kind of birds are nesting, and how can we follow those and change those. So those will be run by our land protection specialist, Sarah Jo Dickens, and Caitlin Willard, our outreach and development director. So we're going to see if the people in the community are interested in that. All of this is free. All of this is, just something that we do to help people connect to the open spaces that we save. And the Discovery Science event is going to meet at the trailhead opposite the McPolin Farm at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Okay. Finally, you've got your biggest fundraiser of the year, that's the Blue Sky Bash.
That's the Blue Sky Bash. Yes, we do. Have you heard of a jackalope?
Well, we've heard of it. We've seen postcards of them.
We've seen postcards of them. If you want to see a jackalope, you should come to the Blue Sky Bash. It will be on August 26th. That's Saturday, August 26th. It's our gala. It's our biggest fundraiser. It supports our ability to save land across Summit County. There are early bird tickets on sale right now for $300 each on our website. Again, that's wesaveland.org. But they're going fast. There are only about 100 tickets left. So, and the early bird pricing ends at the end of July. But I think the tickets will be gone if they're, they're going fast. So
at the end of June, you mean?
At the end of July, that's if the price goes up.
Okay.
Yeah. So
the event is?
But the event is on August 26th.
August 26th.
August 26th.
Okay.
But don't dawdle. Yep. You want to get your tickets. You know, we have transportation out and back. That's included in the price. And High West is sponsoring or supporting the food and inventing the jackalope. If you drink a few, you might see one.
Okay. Cheryl, thanks. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
KPCW News, time now 8:50. Okay, I think we got that connection back on the phone again. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
So first up, of course, is the business of swearing in the new Summit County Attorney, Margaret Olson. Does she start right away?
She does. From what I understand, she's still got some cases that she's going to have to put by the wayside on our current docket. But yes, she will be starting right away, and we'll start seeing her at meetings.
All right. Let's see. There will be a briefing on spring flooding. A flood watch is out this week for the Weber River through South Summit. So have you seen any problems at this point?
A little bit. Not any flooding problems per se. I mean, we are seeing some places where the Weber has gone over its banks, but not affecting property at this point. What we did see is there was a search and rescue this weekend where a woman up in the Uintas went in after a dog that had jumped in the river and got caught by some trees. And luckily, her head was above water. But we want to make sure that people are very careful around the fast-moving water that's going right now. The Weber, I did see a report this morning that the Weber is crested. But we still have high water, and we still need to be very vigilant.
The woman got out. What about her dog?
I don't think the dog made it, but the woman was rescued.
Okay. Again, remind us where sandbags are and if somebody should need them, but it sounds like
Sure. Our Public Works Department has sandbags available, and they have been placing them around the community where our communities have needed them. I don't have the specifics on that. If you want the specifics on exactly where sand and sandbags have been dropped, call our Public Works Department or our emergency manager. They have that information.
All right. You'll also get an update on the fire season. Basically, the message seems to be that the hazard is greater in lower elevations and that the runoff melted earlier this year, so maybe less so in higher elevations. Any forecast then for the summer?
I believe that we'll be getting a forecast from Bryce. He usually has the information by this time. I think what the big message is we had a good snowpack, we had good moisture over the winter. That usually turns into growth of grasses and things like that can be combustible. We're just going to have to keep track of it as far as moisture levels over the next few weeks and months to see how precipitation happens and see how that affects those things that can burn.
So how soon do we talk about whether any restrictions on fireworks will be enacted?
Well, again, as you remember, with the municipalities have the ability to put those types of restrictions in place. The state fire marshal is who governs the unincorporated county, so we'll be following their direction this year.
All right. The website, letsgosummit.com, we'll also talk a little bit about, just get an update on that. I mean, what is that update? Is it going to be reporting on transit projects?
Exactly. So as the voters voted in the 2.25% sales taxes last year, you know, it's our obligation to make sure that we broadcast as widely as possible and be transparent on what's actually happening with those dollars. So this is a part of our attempt to do that. Of course, we've been having our transportation planners meet on your show regularly to talk about those things and getting press releases out. But we really want to have a presence out there in the web so that people have a place to go in order to understand what's happening with those dollars.
All right. Let's see. There are some amended documents for Mountain Regional Water Special Service District. Any significant there?
Nothing real significant, just some regular updates to some of their policies and procedures. I don't have the exact details on that, but Andy would be ready to brief those.
All right. And the council then also scheduled to vote on recommendations of the Restaurant Tax Committee and also on the RAP Tax Cultural Grants. Was there any decision about the request for consideration from the Dave Nichols and the Paralympic Bobsled Skeleton Association?
There has not been a decision yet. The U.S. Adaptive Paralympic Bobsled and Skeleton Association did submit a request for reconsideration. I believe that the council will be talking about that tomorrow. They may hold off on making a decision on that full list of grants in order to make that consideration. We may even be amending the agenda today to put that in. So stay tuned on that.
So what about the general point that he raises? I mean, can athletic organizations undertake projects that relate to culture and education?
Well, as you know, the state law is fairly clear about what types of organizations are eligible for these types of cultural grants. And their primary purpose has to be, according to our attorney, the primary purpose of the organization has to be culture. And that's fairly specifically defined in the state law, and our ordinance follows the state law. So, you know, he kind of made two different requests in this reconsideration. First, that they reconsider the grant, and I'm sure that the council will give that its due consideration. But he also asked that the council consider working with the legislature to broaden that definition so that items that might be considered a cultural project within an organization that's not a primary purpose cultural organization could be considered. But right now, that would take a state law change in order to consider that.
All right. The county also approving a design and construction firm for the fairgrounds. The staff report says that the top two contenders were 1.2 points apart. So a recommendation here?
Well, the staff is recommending that AGC Architects and R&O be the firm that we go into negotiations with. Part of our procurement policy allows that as we go into that negotiation, if there's something, you know, especially from some of the criteria that changes our viewpoint, we could stop that negotiation and go and negotiate with the firm that came in the second place. So we're kind of looking for direction from the council to help us move forward with that.
So are these firms working on the first phase of the fair, or do they have the entire project?
It is the first phase of the fair. So the budgeted $5 million amount is the hard budget number, and they will be looking at how much of that phase one we can complete under that dollar amount.
All right. Also, a resolution approving a conservation easement for the Wright Ranch up Chalk Creek Canyon. Is this the Denny Wright property?
I'm not sure who the actual property owner is. It's referred to as the Wright Ranch within the resolution. The Leray McAllister Fund requires that the local governing body pass a resolution of the support in order to apply for the funds. It's one of the sources of funds that the Summit Land Conservancy is looking for to fund this conservation easement. It's a similar process to one that we did, I think, 2 years ago in order to qualify that project for that funding source.
All right, so that's where all the money's coming from, the McAllister Fund?
I don't believe that's where all the money's coming from. I'd have to talk with Cheryl at the Land Conservancy to understand that specifically, but I know it's one of the sources.
All right, so is the county putting some in, too, and how much?
It has not been asked to be put in. It has not been, this project specifically has not been put in front of the Eastern Summit Ag and Open Space Preservation Group to consider funding. This is a preliminary resolution just to support that application for that funding source.
Okay. Wanted to ask you also, how is, if at all, is Summit County being affected by the EPA suing United Park City Mines Company and Talisker?
Well, of course, you know, as you've seen lately, the Lower Silver Creek area and in EPA parlance, OU 2 and 3, and then, of course, the repository, OU 1, operating unit 1, those are all areas within the unincorporated part of the county. They're also areas that the county is very concerned about future development, as well as has some open space plans for those areas. We keep a close eye on those items. It's an indication to us that the work has not been happening at the schedule that the EPA would like at this point. We're keeping in contact with the EPA to understand what that means.
Well, you can't even find a representative for United Park City Mines. The two phone numbers that they used to have been disconnected or no longer in service, as the message says. So if we can't get a hold of them, I mean, does the EPA then come after the property owners to do the cleanup?
I'm not sure exactly how that would happen in the future. However, I know that the EPA is in contact with United Park City Mines and the parent companies that are involved with that. That's partly what this suit is about. The United Park City Mines did turn in some documentation to the EPA related to the site characterization, I think is the proper term. This lawsuit could be the result of that. I haven't spoken directly with the EPA about this lawsuit to understand that, but that's my suspicion.
Yeah. Does the EPA stay in touch with you, the executive office, since apparently they don't contact the county health department?
They keep in contact with the council and with our attorney's office. That's the main channel of communication.
Okay. Also, is the county doing anything with the landowners then right now along that corridor who may want to develop there?
We've heard of, and I believe there has been one application within the last 2 years in regards to the Gilmore property, the Florence Gilmore Trust property. That is the only recent thing that I've heard about. Other than that, we have not had any direct contact with any of the property owners.
Okay. All right, Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
Just want to mention again, be real careful around our rivers and streams at this time of year. It's such a dangerous place.
All right. Tom Fisher, the manager of Summit County, thanks for your time this morning. A collection of five Park City ski and snowboard clubs are coming together as one all-encompassing organization to be known as the Park City Ski and Snowboard Club. The news was released with the members of each of the different organizations in an email yesterday. In the studio to give us details about this are Walt Evans, who was hired to serve as the integration facilitator, along with Jesse Hunt, director of the Park City Ski Team, who will now serve as director of the new Park City Ski and Snowboard Club. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
Leslie. How are you this morning?
Doing well, thanks. So certainly some people have known about the consolidation, but really it wasn't made public until yesterday. Can maybe, Jesse, you talk about some of the reaction that you've seen?
Well, I think it has been a rumor in the community. You know, there's been a lot of talk. We got together even a year and a half ago to talk about the feasibility of it. And then it really got serious about 9 months ago, and I'll have Walt really speak to those details. But it has been out in the community, and it's been out there for the right reasons. I think everybody wanted to do a better job with ski and snowboard programming in the community in terms of efficiencies and some of these things that can make us all better. People recognize that, so it's been a direction that we've been moving in for a long time now.
Yeah, so you were chosen as the new executive director of this group. Basically, this is something you did on the national level with U.S. Ski Team?
Well, I was the director for the Alpine program for the U.S. Ski Team for 7 years before coming to the Park City Ski Team and being the director for 8 years. So 15 years of working in that area, guiding programs, directing programs. So I feel like, you know, I'm uniquely qualified in that regard to take what I've learned in Alpine and kind of spread it across some of the other disciplines. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, we're more similar than we are different in a lot of ways when it comes to delivering these sport programs. And obviously there's specifics in each sport and cultures to each sport. But generally speaking, there's a lot of similarities. And I look forward to, you know, creating some efficiencies and doing a good job at bringing together a strong team.
Well, let's take a step back then, Walt, and maybe you can talk a little bit about why this is happening. I mean, if it's been thought about for years now, the timing's just right.
Yeah, it was fortunate for me, Leslie, in a way, because I was looking for something to do. I was with the U.S. Ski Team for 30 years, and then most recently I went over to Aspen Valley Ski and Snowboard Club for 4 years and worked as their excellence director and retired last summer. And then in October, I got a nice call from Mark Norman, one of the vice presidents at the UOLF, and he said, Walt, will you come work with us on this project? And, of course, I was very interested in that. And one of the things that made the difference, Leslie, was each of the clubs anteed up a little money to help cover my contract. And so I worked about 20 hours a week and worked with a team. And we had a team of volunteers who are board members of the four primary clubs, which include Summit Ski Team, Park City Ski Team, Team Park City United, and the Utah Olympic Park programs, which are Fly Freestyle and Park City Nordic. So all of those clubs, as well as YSA, the Youth Sports Alliance, anteed up to help with my funding. And my title is facilitator, which is kind of a weird title, and I think about it because I have a lot of responsibility but no authority in this situation. So now Jesse's on board as the executive director, and he'll have the authority. But we started meeting in October, and so for 9 months we've met every Thursday for those 9 months, and this team of volunteers has been incredible. It's been hard work, but we now feel we have the foundation going.
I was thinking that USSA had chipped in some money here, but that's not correct then. It was all done locally.
Done locally, yes.
All right. Is this something USSA would like to see, though?
USSA is very supportive of the initiative because this fits better with their club model, and it'll give us, particularly Jesse and his staff, an opportunity to work very closely with the development systems in each of the USSA sports.
So only one local club, Wasatch Freestyle, chose not to participate. How come?
Well, I think it was up to the programs to decide whether or not they wanted to come in. All the programs were engaged and asked to come and join. And as Walt said, there was a group of board members, you know, volunteers that really saw it as a huge advantage for their programs. And that was the group that initially came together.
So talk a little bit about why we're doing this.
Well, from my standpoint, I think, again, it's been something that we've talked about for more, you know, over a year. And it's been, the reason is that we feel like we can do a better job with delivering programming. We can be more efficient on the, obviously, the administrative side. There's just a lot of duplication of things going on with all these different programs. So when we bring that together, certainly there'll be, you know, efficiencies there. When it comes to sending out a voice, having a voice and sending out a message, will be one program. So in terms of enrollment and sign up and clarity with the community, we feel like, you know, we will be in a much better place there. We feel like the kids are going to gain a huge advantage because we can do a better job at having them discover where their passions are, because they'll have an opportunity to do sampling in multi-sport at an entry level. So, you know, hopefully we can engage them in a better way and really, you know, find their passions and hopefully retain kids longer.
So the way I understand it, for the youngest athletes, this really becomes just a bigger playground for them, allowing to kind of experiment with different sports. But the programs as we know them today on the upper levels remain the same?
Well, there's some great programming going on. I mean, obviously we have a history of delivering high-level programming and seeing kids move on to high levels in both internationally and at the collegiate levels. So we'll continue to drive that programming and continue to support that the way we have, or the way the community has, because you know, I believe that if people see that these sport programs can deliver to these athletes and have them reach their potential, they're going to stick around and they're going to be engaged. And that's obviously our goal, is to have kids stay in these programs and reach their potential.
All right, you will continue to be a nonprofit organization under the umbrella of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. So what's their role in this?
Well, we're actually, they're going to be a strong partner, obviously, and we're under their umbrella for a number of reasons. There's obviously that partnership will give us some advantages in terms of organization and administration. So we look to, again, work with them to create a real strong backbone so that we can have the continuity and consistency of programming. So that's really, really part of it. Obviously, there's facilities out there. You know, we're engaged with them in the use of those facilities. So that partnership is critical for our success moving forward. And so I think, you know, there's obviously the facility piece. There's the administration piece that we can really collaborate on.
So you will continue to be a nonprofit organization. Funding will need to be divvied up now among all of the organization. How's that done? I mean, have you figured that out? Is it done on a per capita basis? Or, I mean, some sports may take more money for different athletes.
Correct. And I think, you know, some of the programs are more developed in terms of their fundraising efforts. So obviously we're going to, you know, look closely at that. I think going forward, there'll be a formula to support these different programs so that they have a competitive advantage in their area, in their sport. So I think, you know, it's really looking at, you know, what's required, what are the requirements in each sport, and building a formula out on in terms of supporting those sports.
So will enrollment fees be what they are now? Is that what people can expect?
Well, the financials that have been put together on this have been, really it's been a merge, not really a consolidation, in the regard that, you know, we're looking at supporting all the programming that's currently out there and being delivered. So, you know, again, it's the goal is to finance those programs in the best way possible and continue that programming.
Well, let's talk about jobs. I mean, is anyone losing their job as a result of this consolidation, or maybe taking a significant pay cut because they're now no longer program director, or how's that going?
Well, in the transition phase, as I said, it's more of a merger than a consolidation, in the regard that we, you know, we really want to continue to deliver great programming, and, you know, obviously we'll evaluate that. The structure will be, we'll have four division directors. We'll have an Alpine, Freestyle, Nordic, and Snowboard division, and then there'll be a director in each one of those divisions that helps deliver that programming. And that's really critical for efficiencies, again, and also for just making sure that we're organized when we go out and deliver programming.
Yeah. So do you see participation numbers increasing as a result of this?
Well, we're looking to, yes, increase it. I mean, one of the things that we've experienced is, you know, we're in a growing community, and these programs are all, you know, for the most part, growing at the moment. And, you know, we feel like we can do a better job at in this growing community at dealing with these numbers. And we're looking to grow it.
Right. So you'll have a number of full-time, year-round folks. Will that allow, you know, also to give them some kind of benefits that they may not receive now?
Yes, I mean, that is one of the things that is going to come along with this merger, is that we can do a better job with full-time people, year-round people, as we create these partnerships. So we'll be able to provide some benefits for staffing to help retain staff. So, you know, one of our critical success factors is having great people, and you want to be able to take care of those people, and this will, you know, we'll be able to do that in a better way.
All right, and then talk a little bit about, I mean, the training facilities. Of course, we've got the UOP, we've got Park City, somewhat at Deer Valley. They're all on board as well?
Yes, we've, in this process, we've met with our partners, and we're getting a lot of support to move in this direction from our partners. So it just feels right. It feels right for a number of reasons, you know, from, you know, the community and members of the community to our facilities, our facility partners.
So you'd mentioned Youth Sports Alliance a little bit earlier. I mean, are they one of the partners? I guess I'm just wondering, is there a need now for the YSA? Because it sounds like you've just created it.
Well, we're just ski and snowboard. At this point, the YSA has been broader than that, and they'll continue to operate and continue to hopefully support us in the way they have. We're going to obviously focus on our area and hopefully be a better partner with YSA in the future by being more organized and bringing these programs together.
Amy's thanking you already, yeah. Walt, anything else you want to add to this discussion in terms of why you think this is a good idea?
Well, I want to take this opportunity to compliment our integration team, those 10 volunteers that have worked all winter with me to help make this come to fruition. And I also want to point out that in the formation of the Park City Ski and Snowboard Club, we will have a local board. They're being called a board of managers. And that'll be an independent governance board that oversees the club structure, policies, funding, and works very closely on a daily basis with Jesse and the leadership staff. So I appreciate the work that the team has done. They've been phenomenal, and it's been hard work, but we're finally getting there.
Yeah. So while this is new to us, it sounds like it's being done many, many other ski areas.
It's a best practice, frankly, in the big ski towns like Sun Valley, Jackson Hole, Steamboat Springs, Aspen Valley Ski and Snowboard Club, Ski and Snowboard Club Vail. It's the best model and a lot of efficiencies.
All right, going to be able to roll it out then for the upcoming season?
Well, you know, really right now is the rollout in the community in terms of letting people know. We'll have a open house on June 21st at 7 p.m. down at the UOP. And we'll be able to update people on our progress at that point and take some input. Then we also have a website that's we have now that is parkcityssc.org. And we have information on how the structure of the program is being put together. There's a pro forma which contains information on the club culture and philosophy, where we want to go with that, as well as the governance, leadership and governance, and the kind of the financial model behind this new club. So I encourage people to go to that website, again, parkcityssc.org, and see what we're all about. It's exciting. We've got a lot of great information already posted, and we look forward to getting the word out.
And we'd also talked about one of the largest fundraisers for Park City Ski Team has been the ski swap, and now everyone's going to be part of that, so it's going to be the ski and snowboard swap.
Well, we've had snowboarding involved in the ski swap for years, so yeah, absolutely, it's going to continue to be the Park City Ski and Snowboard Swap, and we'll hopefully have a lot more volunteers helping out on the floor, so we're looking forward to that event.
Okay, Jesse, Walt, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
8:45 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, longtime program director for the Park City Film Series, George Jamalski, has announced that he'll be retiring from the nonprofit. He joins me now to look at some of the highlights there of that tenure. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you've been with the film series how long?
About 21 years.
And it's existed for how many years?
Probably like 25 or 26. I think it was mid-90s when it actually started. It started under the branch of the Arts Council, and then 1999, I believe, it spun off as its own nonprofit.
Okay. You've been doing it for a small stipend, yeah? Or was it volunteer in the beginning?
Well, actually, at the beginning, yeah, I volunteered. I've always really enjoyed film, loved film. I was married to a screenwriter, and story was always really important. Film was important, and I started out volunteering. Jill Orschel, one of the early projections, trained me because I just loved film and being able to touch it, and that was the old days when we actually had film that we were screening. So I started out as a projectionist, and then went from there, kind of was Frank Normile's right-hand man when he was the executive director because he was very non-technical, and I have a technical background. My main job is software development. I've been doing that for many years, so I kind of took over. He realized I had the technical capabilities, and I kind of took over that, and just first off just managing the projectionist and then eventually evolving when he left, becoming the technical director, and then when Destiny left, a program director as well as a technical director.
All right, so you're doing two jobs, really.
I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I don't consider myself as an expert in any field, although I think I'm good at a lot of things, so I think that makes it, and I do have the technical ability, so I think it fit because, you know, in a nonprofit, you got to carry many hats. I was doing website development, programming, underwriting, invoicing, all the technical maintenance and that of the equipment.
Yeah, I'm just curious, though. I mean, how many people do they need to hire then once you're gone?
Oh, I think they're in good hands. You know, Shay Blackley, he's one of our longtime projectionists. He started as a high school student. He's going to take over the technical duties. So he'll be managing the projectionists and the venue and making sure the equipment, working with the Sundance Institute and those others. And, you know, he's in great hands. I think he'll probably do some of the website stuff. And then I believe that they're going to hire somebody to actually do the weekend programming, which is what I've done, and the gathering underwriters for the films and all that.
So as program director, you were the one responsible then for what we saw there?
Yes, for the weekend stuff. Katie Wang, the current executive director, has really stepped up our free weekday screenings, part of the real community and stuff. But I've always programmed the weekend films. I work with a broker out of New York, and it's always been a challenge. That's been the biggest, the hardest part, the most frustrating part, I think, of the job in the last probably, let's say, 8 to 10 years, just because of all the competition, you know, with the theaters in town, you know, and also with online pay-per-view, all the streaming, you know, it's kind of cut into that audience. But I think there are, you know, it's still important to see a film on the big screen, and there we have a loyal audience, and it's great.
Well, that was going to be my comment. It's just that it seems like the films that we have seen over the last several years have become a little bit more obscure, but that was done on purpose?
Yes, I think part of that is, see, we're the film series is a single-screen art house theater. I think we comprise like 4% of screens nationwide. So we're not a first-run theater like the Broadway. Broadway shows a lot of independent, down in Salt Lake, a lot of independent films, but we get a film like 2 or 3 months after the fact. So timing-wise, it's really hard because a film could become stale or it may be locked out for this. You know, every year around November, we get locked out of films that are in Oscar contention because we're just not big enough, you know, even if it's considered an independent film. Like we showed Moonlight, but we showed it after the Oscars. Now, I couldn't acquire that film in November. Whenever there are number of films that we missed the boat on, like Manchester by the Sea was one of the ones I wanted to bring, but timing-wise, we just couldn't get it.
Hmm. So how do you think the series has changed over the year? Of course, you mentioned that the biggest change, I think, is that we've gone from film to digital.
Yes, that's one of the biggest changes, and that happened a number of years ago. For people who don't know, 35mm film comes on a bunch of small reels, and it gets built up. And then it gets broken down and sent to the next theater. But the digital aspect, we started when our advertisers stuff, we were showing a slideshow for our pre-film advertisement on a carousel reel. And I think our first digital system was we acquired with the restaurant tax money. It was a partnership with the city. It was just a standard digital system, and we had a laptop computer. Finally, we were showing the on-screen advertising and pre-film stuff, but we still were doing film, large part of film until the digital revolution started a number of years ago.
Yeah, other changes that you've seen over the years? I mean, that's a couple decades. a lot have changed.
Yeah, well, I think the big thing is the programming aspect. You know, we've partnered with so many other nonprofits. We've had a number of programs we've done during the week as free screenings. We have a real community series that was started when Frank was there, partnering with other nonprofits, showing, you know, films that help out other nonprofits or exposing issues. And then I think we had a real classic series that kind of dialed, and this was died. It was kind of a film noir series, old films. And the intent was to get the younger generation who hadn't seen some of these films, post-silent era films, but to expose that on a Thursday night. And that kind of lasted for a while. You know, we've partnered with the Sundance Institute. They used to do a doc series. We partnered with Slam Dance, do Best of Slam Dance series, a whole number of great programs.
So you're leaving the film series, but you're not leaving town.
I am staying in town, yes. I love Park City. My kids have grown up here. It's a wonderful community. Both are now, my one just graduated college, the other one is a sophomore in school, but they thrived in this environment, you know, the school. I love the schools here. I love the community. I've always given to the community, and I'll probably give in other ways, but my concentration now is going to be just kind of relaxing, playing music. I still have a full-time job, but this will free up those weekday and weekend evenings.
Yeah, just time to make more time.
Time
for
to
you.
Make more time, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you'd like to say, Jay?
No, I just want to thank all the wonderful volunteers I've worked with and the staff and contract employees at the film series, because we could not do it without everybody's help, especially and the local support of underwriters and members that come to the film series.
Okay, we'll see you around town.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks for your time. KPCW News Time, 8:53. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. In 1957, the Kingston Trio brought the tradition of American folk music into the mainstream. Now, 60 years after Tom Dooley charted number one, the trio is still bringing great memories to audiences and will be appearing on the Egyptian Theater stage Thursday through Sunday nights. One of those who has been part of the trio since 1976 is George Grove. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
So I think your tenure with the trio is only outlasted by one of the original founders, Bob Shane. Is he making the trip to Park City?
Oh, goodness, no. Bob is 83 and happily retired.
How many iterations of the trio have there been?
Well, not that many, considering 60 years. There was the original group of Bob Shane, Nick Reynolds, and Dave Gard. And in 1961, Dave left the group and John Stewart came in. Then in 1973, Bob decided to go back on the road as a trio and worked with a group until 1976. That's when I came into the group. And the gentleman that was in the group from 73 until 76 is back in the group. He came in when Bob decided to retire.
Okay.
And then in 2005, we got the services of one of the most wonderful tenor singers you've ever heard, Rick Daugherty. So the group that everybody sees on stage, will be seeing on stage in Park City, has been together for over 12 years.
All right. So how much touring does the group still do every year?
Sometimes too much. We do probably between 50 and 60 concerts annually, and that's all over the country. So a lot of this year, what we've been doing is flying from our homes out here in the West back to the East Coast for 4 days, then go home for 3 days, then go back to the East Coast for 3 days. So we're touring constantly, and it's really a blessing, you know, to know that the fans, many of them, the original fans of the group, still want to hear the music, and we also enjoy what's called the grandfather effect, because the grandkids will go in and they'll look at these large outsized things called record albums, and they'll say, "What's this?" And the grandparents will play it for them, and they'll want to come to a concert, and that too is a real blessing, you know, a whole new generation of fans.
So tell us what to expect for your shows. I'm guessing you do a different show every night.
We do. This group has over 400 songs in their recorded repertoire, and although we don't know all of them, because time limits us in what we can do on stage, we do all of the songs that people expect to hear. You know, Tom Dooley, Scotch and Soda, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, Tijuana Jail, The Reverend Mr. Black. The list is almost endless. And then we have recorded new songs, too, which over the past 3 years since the release of our last recording, fans have purchased that to see what it is that we're doing, and now they're requesting those songs. So we do primarily the old repertoire songs that people expect to hear from the Kingston Trio, and we throw in a smattering of the new.
So what do you think the Kingston Trio's legacy has been?
The legacy has been the fact that we have inspired so many people to become either acquainted with music on a personal level or acquainted with music on a professional level. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, people picked up guitars and in some cases banjos because of the Kingston Trio. And people like the Beach Boys and the Eagles, groups like that, said they would never have gotten into music had it not been for the Kingston Trio.
Well, the Kingston Trio appearing Thursday through Sunday night, Saturday night at the Egyptian Theater. Tickets start at $29. There's some special pricing on Thursday. ParkCityShows.com for more information. George, thanks for your time.